Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast presented by Underdog Fantasy. I am Vlad Sedler at RotoGood on Twitter, and with me as always, the man himself, Booms62 on Twitter, Jason Anthony, live from New York?
Connecticut. Flew into New York. I am now in Connecticut, and I just could not miss a week recording this pod with you, Vlad. Here we are. I'm in a hotel room, and we're talking some ball. I cannot wait.
Yeah, you got what, the Warriors in the background? I have not been following basketball at all. Are they good? Do they still have Steph Curry and everything?
Yeah, Steph Curry's still around. They're in a play-in playoff game, so it's kind of a win-or-go-home thing. So it's kind of like March Madness right now. So trying not to get distracted with that on in the background. I'm going to focus on baseball and then watch the second half after we're done here.
All right. So we are recording on Tuesday night, April the 16th. We are in the midst of week four of the MLB season, and we're going to talk about all the wild things that have happened in baseball, some of the things that we might be looking forward to, some injuries, promotions, and just some general player overview today. Before we do, wanted to get in some general housekeeping as we do every week over here at FTN Fantasy. The most exciting thing is that our new website is launched. Project long in the making, long overdue. And I wanted to give a special shout out to our co-operations officers there, Frank Brink, our data guy, and then Marshall Gershon. He's been like our one-man customer service wrecking crew. And I think he got like over 200 questions today, like literally knock them all out, get everything set. But the new site, I don't know if you had a chance to check it out yet, but looks pretty awesome, and I'm excited for what's going to be on here.
I have not yet. I'm excited to get on and to navigate through it. And, you know, the FTN keeps getting better, man. Just exciting to be a part of. And, man, it's fun times here.
And the sheets, some of the these data tables that we're working with, like if you see Mike Mager's drops and disasters, these are live sheets that we can now update on the fly. You know, Mike submits his article on a Sunday morning, but then some injury hits and we don't have to go through the whole rigmarole of, you know, yeah, nobody needs to know the background of everything, but it's just like live updates on the site. That's going to be pretty sweet. And then also my fab table, it'll be sortable as well. So starting this Saturday, you'll be able to just go in, see the article, but also click in by 12 team, by 15, by position. It'll be pretty sweet. Additionally, Jenny Butler has been a phenomenal addition already, her first weekend in, working with us on the data side with Frank Brank and MLB Dream, Lucas and the team. And we're just like, man, all this stuff on the background, we're setting up formulas, SGP, standard gains points formulas, for our weekly projections that are powered by FTN data. So you can get in there and see the, basically help you with your lineup decisions for pitchers, hitters. And now even more cool is one of our FTN betting tools. It's the daily projections. So those are actually now added onto our new site for seasonal baseball subscribers. So you can literally see projected strikeouts for the day. And this is, again, based on the FTN model that runs simulations of games of like, I think it's something like 44,000 games. I know, you know, kind of sounds weird, crazy, but like these are like literally like simulated at bats at a time. It's some pretty sweet stuff, and I'm excited to be a part of it. I'm still learning, really. You know, been a content player guy, and just like over the last year and a half, really getting in on the data side, and really pretty much I'm digging it very, very much.
Yeah, I can't wait to learn more about it. I feel like I'm an outsider with all this, you know, upgrades. So I really got to dive in and see how to use it to my advantage. And I'm sure all the subscribers will do the same. So, you know, use all the tools that you have in front of you to succeed. And then hopefully they'll work and we'll make some money together.
Yes, yes, yes. And again, still very early in the season. We are about, what, 80? We got about 88% of the season remaining. And unfortunately, it's just been a shite show, to say the least. We saw all the attrition with the starting pitchers, a lot of really great arms. And as soon as all that happened, then you had like the Bobby Miller scare and just Garrett Whitlock with an oblique right before we recorded. It's nonstop. And now it's hit on the hitter side.
Yeah, it was a matter of time with all the pitchers that were going down. We were going to start to see some hitters going down. And it feels like it's just the beginning. So hold on tight and enjoy the ride because it's going to be a bumpy one.
Yeah, I mean, so we've got already Christian Yelich. He's dealing with a lower back strain, and I think he sat one of the games on the weekend and just kind of writing on the wall for, there on Monday that he was going to sit that game, that it was probably not a good idea to start him in NFBC leagues for the first half of the week. And so, yeah, there's just, you want to take advantage of every single little lineup spot you can. I know myself, I'm really lucky that I caught the Seiya Suzuki news. I just happened to catch it like right before the deadline, and boom, all of a sudden, before you know it, I was able to get all my Suzuki line, players out just in time. But it would have been an absolute mess to take that zero. He's dealing with a moderate oblique, so again, oblique's like the word of the week.
Yeah, did I read that he hurt it running? So which would make me feel better about the injury, that it wasn't swinging. But man, I miss kind of fat, out of shape baseball players that didn't have oblique issues. It
They didn't
didn't
even
seem
have
like a, I
obliques, I
mean,
don't think.
it didn't exist back then. But now everybody's so strong and wound tight. There's just so many soft tissue issues, injuries because of it. Now we have Jake Berger out with an oblique as well. Talk about a guy you don't think has an oblique. He's not a ripped, in shape guy. It's kind of shocking to see. But he seems like he's going to be out for a bit. And third base is just becoming a wasteland. And also you have the Rafael Devers scare yesterday. And then I just got a text that he left the game with a knee issue today. He's just a hot mess. There's not going to be any players to play at third base here coming up. So
Yeah, I
don't know
mean,
what to do.
third base has been the absolute worst. I mean, between Josh Jung and Royce Lewis, I mean, it's been an absolute complete wasteland. And by the way, the Marlins, that offense is just really it's really sad. I mean, I think Brian De La Cruz is hitting well. Luis Arraez is looking good. I think outside of the series this weekend against Atlanta, had a couple of lefties. That was going to be tough. But other than that, you're getting usually a couple of hits out of that guy every game. But and even Jazz, I mean, he's not doing his Yelich thing quite yet. He does have a few steals, a couple of bombs, so they'll get going at some point. But man, it kind of feels like you can kind of tell the way the team is kind of is already planning for the future, right? You got Max Meyer is going to be unstretched of all things, and just Lizardo will get traded at some point. It's kind of a, it's not looking good over there.
Yeah, it's almost like the Marlins didn't have a pitcher, a young pitcher they were trying to protect last year by monitoring innings. So they seem like they learned a lot. But having 10 strikeouts in a game and just dominating, I guess that deserves to get sent down to Triple A. So the other thing that just drives me nuts about these teams that struggle is the managers just insist on platooning. These hitters just can't get a rhythm. Why not just give him a chance? Why not give Jesus Sanchez a chance against lefties? Why platoon every single day when you're playing Avisel Garcia? I don't understand what their thought process is. It's got to be analytic driven, but it's as a baseball player, as an athlete, it's hard to get a rhythm when you're not out there every day.
Yeah, and it's really sad. I mean, right now they have one of the worst records in baseball. They're not quite the White Sox. They're averaging just a tick over 2 runs per game. They have been shut out, what, like a record 6 times in their first 16 games, and there is no bright future. Like Nick Mastrini is him showing up is your bright spot. You're adding Mike Clevinger and Tommy Pham. Our guy, Rob Orr, had a really funny tweet. By the way, he's pretty damn funny on Twitter. He's talking about how, I mean, think about it, really. You signed Tommy Pham and Mike Clevinger. I'm sure the clubhouses aren't going to have any problems there.
Just the perfect solution to a struggling team. So at least we got my boy Michael Kopech though in the bullpen, so he gets some saves for us.
Yeah, you got that. You got, Eloy coming back, Eloy Jimenez. It's very rarely we can trust him to stay healthy for a long span. By the way, I thought it was kind of funny. You remember the, I think it was during COVID, it was Clevinger and Plesac, right? They're kind of, you know, they're like a couple of clowns,
two knuckleheads,
two bros. And remember, I think they, what was it like some sort of COVID, what was it? They like had a party and like broke some law or some rules, or like they got suspended for the team by the team. They had girls over.
Something happened where they went out with some girls, and Plesak went home with one of the girls, and Clevenger came back to the hotel, and he's the one that got in trouble because he got caught.
Yeah. Crazy guys.
Oh man, bros is the perfect word there, Vlad.
Yeah, and the funny part is, recently I kind of snickered when I saw it. Zach Plesak, he's with the Angels, and so he got demoted to Salt Lake, which is their minor league team, their AAA affiliate. And that's hilarious because there's a what is the no drinking or law there, or is it just
Sunday? They have Sundays for sure. Everything's closed as far as bars and everything. I think you can drink there for the most part otherwise, though, but probably not the best place for him. But he's not a very good pitcher, so he might get demoted to AA, wherever that is for the Angels.
Yeah. So yeah, we're kind of bouncing all over the place here, but either way, the fact is injuries are something we're going to be dealing with all season. I feel like fab strategy needs to be, we need to be a little tighter with our money, and I probably shouldn't be one to speak as somebody who spent $190 on Victor Scott and now might be looking to dropping him here soon. I don't see, you know, I thought at some point he would just start hitting. I think his defense has been fine and everything. And like, you know, he keeps getting chances because Tommy Edman isn't ready yet. Dylan Carlson isn't ready yet. Like he's got all the opportunity, but he sat on Tuesday. Unfortunately, I kind of feel like it's, you know, the writing's on the wall there. So between him and then I overspent a little bit on Oliver Dunn, who I hope kind of gets back into more playing time. Joey Ortiz has been stealing it from him lately, but he's been kind of more pinch hitting. He's not like, I mean, there was a chance for him to really run away with it. He was leading off against righties and then I think struck out like four times and went 0-for-9 in two games in Cincinnati. So it was kind of a tough spot for him. So got to be really careful on these spends because there's going to be money we need all season. And there's what, 22 weeks left of bidding. We're going to need every penny of it. Every week there will be somebody that we want to spend on. In fact, there are a couple of guys that are just called up this weekend that Jack Leiter, if he looks good and pitches well, it's people are going to want to spend on him.
Yeah. I think my partner and I got Oliver Dunn in one of the leagues. We needed a middle infielder, and Oliver might be done. So it's one of those things. It's careful what you wish for when you get these wood bids and you win them and you're excited. I don't even think he's even playing against righties anymore. So maybe he was the one stealing at bats from Joey Ortiz and not the other way around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, it's rough out there. Like some people that unfortunately they had a bid on a third baseman this weekend and they ended up with maybe their fifth conditional bid, and it was Trey Lipscomb because Lipscomb had that, what, 3 stolen base game, I think it was about a week ago. And before you know it, he hasn't done anything wrong. He hasn't been bad, but hey, Nick Senzel is back. And there you go, right on a Monday after lock or right around lock, Trey Lipscomb gets sent down. So a big part of the game is just like avoiding the landmines in our lineups, like avoiding the zeros. It's kind of the name of the game, avoid it at all costs, but we have to kind of be extra mindful of it. I remember I had Lipscomb on my bid list, on, you know, my recommended bid list, kind of also like way down. It was like a $1 or $2 guy. Like if you absolutely need somebody, I didn't really think he was going to get sent down. And then Monday morning, I started looking at reports of Senzel and I saw conflicting things that said, oh, he might be back May 1st. But then I'm like, wait a second, he's on a rehab assignment. He's almost done. I mean, he's ready to get called up any minute here. So there's no reason why he won't be up, and someone is going down. So it's probably Lipscomb. So yeah, there it is.
And what prospect would stand in front of Nick Senzel? I mean, what are they thinking?
Hey, he was once a prospect.
He was at one time until the Reds ruined him by not being able to put him in a position. But that's another story for another day. But yeah, I mean, reading the tea leaves with what these GMs, what these managers are going to do next, it is a challenge to kind of predict the future. And I think you did a great job with that of kind of seeing who is going to go down when Senzel comes back up, and kind of limiting your bids or taking him off your waterfall, because you could again be happy you got him and then regretting it, 12 hours later.
You know, the pitchers this weekend, at least in 15 teamers, it was tough to kind of sort through them and rank them. I remember when I first starting putting the Fab article together on Friday night, I was looking at some of the top guys, and it was okay, we're not sure when Jameson Taillon's going to be quite back, but he's on track. Would they really pull Ben Brown, who had been looking good? Are they going to pull him out of the rotation? Ben Brown's listed for a start on Monday, most likely wasn't going to get the start on Tuesday, the later in the week. So how do you account for that? Then you had Jose Buto, who looked phenomenal. I mean, he really wasn't even massively on the radar until he had that nine strikeout outing. Like he's, I mean, people know about him, but he then gets like the Mets bump, because I really think that is a thing. Like the New York players, they'll just spend a little bit more on him, and everybody wants to get like kind of the next star pitcher. And he looked good, right? I mean, he passes the eye test. I mean, he's been a good pitcher in the minors. So he went for a lot more than I thought he would. And then other things like, Jose Soriano, it's one of those things you don't feel great about it. I think it was like at Tampa and at Atlanta, or I forgot, just some other not great start. And then you just don't know. Like at some point, Chase Silt's going to come back. And then will Soriano still be in the rotation? And he throws hard, but his control isn't all great, all that great. Maybe he, walks a bunch of guys. That's exactly what he did on Monday. So yeah, it was just kind of wild this weekend sorting through those top pitchers. What do you think about Buto, Brown, and those guys?
And you didn't even touch on Yariel Rodriguez, another high dollar guy on the Blue Jays, who we don't even know is going to go five innings or not. So it's all over the map. I was a Buto. I was guilty of bidding a lot on Buto. I think it's is it Buto? What's the correct
I think
pronunciation of
so.
that?
We
We'll
really,
go
by
with
the way, we
that for
really
right now.
try. We do look up all these
We do.
players' names. We want to give you the best pronunciation possible. By the way, I completely, Genstad pointed it out. I said Colin Poach last week for Tampa Bay, and I can't live that down. But he did poach a save.
Oh, it's close. It's close, Vlad. I mean, just a bit outside. But Buto, there was a lot of people, a lot of chatter on him before that nine strikeout game. And only thing that game did was drive his price up $60 to $80. I think there was he was going to be picked up for cheap. His last nine starts, I think he's got like a 2.6 ERA. He finished last year really good. Was dominating AAA. Came up this year and had one start before that looked good. And again, pitching is such a wasteland. It's really challenging to get an arm that you feel like you might be able to use rest of year. Still matchup dependent. Like, I don't think anybody's starting him against the Dodgers this week, but it could be a guy you hold on rest of year. So, I mean, I think I was anywhere from 81 to 101 on him, and I got him a lot. And so, fingers crossed on Buto.
Yeah, and then also, how do we balance the, the game of it's a weekly game, and then it's also the whole season, right? Because you're not really bidding 100 plus on Buto if you don't think he has value for the whole season. In fact, the fact that he had at Dodgers this week kind of actually held his price down, right? I mean, if it was home against the White Sox or something, or home Rockies, I couldn't even imagine what his price might be.
Yeah, I mean, you might have been looking in the 200. So, for me personally, pitching wise, it's more of a season long. There's certain weekly streamers that you're attacking. Hitting wise, I'm really trying to focus on a week to week, and kind of maybe getting a week in advance for somebody going to Cincinnati, to Colorado. But if you can get a guy that's rest of season valuable, especially in the pitching landscape that we're in with all the injuries, I'm like I said, I was happy getting him. For the prices I did, I was surprised the backups were not higher. But then I heard other leagues where he went from 130 to 150. So it's one of those things. Get your guys and deal with the consequences later.
And I think in general, it's good to remember what the average or what your weekly allocation is, what your weekly spend is. And that is based on the number of fab periods in a season and your $1,000 budget, comes up to about $37 a week. And man, I don't know. I think it's partially for me, the reason why I'm overspending early, and it's not an excuse, but it's because I'm so hyper focused and writing this article, and also bidding and competing against people that are reading it, and yeah, I mean, people either they agree with me on things or they go way higher, way lower, right? Like I'm not no soothsayer here, but like I'm so hyper focused on it, and then I want to get these guys that I want, and then I kind of forget, you know, you just start getting in the habit, you're just doing your bidding, and then you forgot, well, crap, if I just spent 180 on Victor Scott, and it already kind of feels wrong, and then I spent 80 on, or what is it, 50 on Oliver Dunn, and now like, but I really want Kirby Yates, right? I wanted Kirby Yates this weekend. I spent like 80 in one league, 130 in another, 150-ish in another one, and I got them all. And that's great. Like, I'm happy you got that first save, but who knows how things are going to be 2 weeks from now. All it really takes is just one bad outing, and then, you know, David Robertson gets the next one, and then eventually Leclerc is back. And I didn't even really need it. That's the crazy part. Like, I think it was Andres Munoz and Evan Phillips. So what am I doing even just because he's the new, you know, most likely a closer. And even that was like a stretch at that point. We weren't sure. Why did I spend 150? And then like, now I'm on track to, you know what, I got to now, you know, what if I am really into Jack Leiter next week? I now know I reserve myself to the fact that I'm not going to get him. So, you know, there, and my whole rant here is our guy, Todd Whitestone of FTN, he joined Adam Howe and Kevin Hastings on their podcast. They have a weekly fab podcast, Pitcher List. And they're talking about like kind of like the discipline of it, of like how, when you kind of know when not to bid, or like, you know, it's kind of like being able to restrain yourself because the money runs out. You don't want to have a nice roster competitive team, and then at the All-Star break, you're already at like $60 for the rest of the season. You have no leverage. So you really need to kind of, in, you know, kind of have that self-discipline throughout the season, especially early on.
Yeah. I mean, there's multiple thoughts behind it. You cannot get a loan for fab. So your $1,000 is your $1,000. And there's no $0 bid. So you have to save money in order to do it. That being said, if you pick a closer up now and Kirby Yates, and he's the closer for the last 5 months, that is well worth that bid. And, you know, the odds of Munoz and Phillips staying healthy the rest of the year or keeping the role. I mean, we're watching Munoz pitch to eighth already, and that's without Brash back. You know, it's value. And there's a game theory thought that I would rather have a guy now for five and a half months, and save that fab money to pick the guy up with 8 weeks left, 10 weeks left, because the impact you have is so much greater for the more weeks you have him, if he is the right guy. So get your guys, but be disciplined getting your guys, I guess, if I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth.
Yeah. And then also the value, like you said, the value of the dollar is a little bit less later on, but also usually the average amount people have left after the All-Star break is considerably lower, especially if the injuries keep hitting. It's going to be under 200. It'll be under 150. But I'm still always looking at those teams with the most money in my league. And I'm have to kind of remember that they're going to have that leverage over me later on to get whoever they want. And I'm thinking specifically about just this past weekend, my most important league, it's the super auction, the auction that I did in Vegas. It's like the kind of creme de la creme of players. We actually have two people in our league. Actually, our friend and your partner, Matt Modica, is in that league. Jenny Butler from FTN's in that league. Mike Mager's in that league. Toby Batflip's in that league. It's a loaded league, and I really want to win it. Team is good. It's off to a nice start. It's, you know, whatever, 3 weeks, doesn't matter. It's like top three. But Mike Mager has this incredible team, just like, you know, like I feel I do. And I'm looking after the fab bids. He didn't buy anyone. I think he bought someone for like $4, and he beat him out. Like, I forgot. It was like some really good player, but it got him for four compared to three, and he's got like 984 left. And I'm sitting here with like my, you know, 700, 699. I'm like, man, I hope this doesn't come to bite me later on. Cause this is, you know, it's competitive stuff. I want to, you know, I want to win this league. A lot has to happen between now and then, but man, I remember the good old days. I used to be the one with the hammer in the last 2 months of the year. And now I'm the one having to scrape together and settle for like fifth, sixth conditionals because I just don't have enough money.
Yeah, and everything evolves, right? Maybe your fab bidding is evolving towards being more comfortable the last 2 months going those $2-3 bids rather than having the hammer. What did the hammer get for you? So, you know, we continue to evolve as players. And, you know, who did you get for your $200, $300 in fab? I'm sure there's some players you like so far if your team's up there at the top through 3 weeks, right?
Yeah, I mean, no, it was like Oliver Dunn, Kirby Yates. Now, I guess in that team, I didn't spend too much, but I'm just like, it's just that FOMO of seeing somebody else with, you know, 950, 980. You're like, why can't I do that?
Yeah. I mean, all those guys that spent the 300 on the starting pitcher last year, 400 on the starting pitcher, other than Bybee, which one of them actually worked? So they might be saving their money for that. It's never fun to be up against a guy that has more fab than you the last 6-8 weeks, but grind it out. Big Bucks Bob Crematola won the main event without any fab the last 6 weeks. And that really opened my eyes. I mean, there's obviously some luck involved, but there's some luck involved with who we pick up. So, you know, it's doable. It's all doable. It's a personal strategy, and fab is its own unique beast. And then, you know, even more challenging for you, and to a lighter extent, me, bouncing back and forth between the 15th and the 12th, because you can be so much more effective with less fab in the 12th than the 15th. So it's a challenge kind of getting those bibs optimized as well.
By the way, in the 12s, just something interesting that I'm noticing is, so like I'm okay to get a player that is very low rostered if I really like them this week. And a couple of players that were kind of higher up in my fab pecking order and in the article were guys that righty hitters that mostly only play against lefties. And that's Garrett Cooper and Wilmer Flores. And these are guys that I'm even willing to grab and start in a 12er over, you know, like I literally picked up, I think, Garrett Cooper for like a dollar or two just to play him over Buxton, because I didn't feel comfortable with Buxton with three at Baltimore and he's not hitting really all that well. And I was like, fine, I have no problem with it. I'm looking at who Minnesota's up against. And then I'm looking at all these righties, or I'm sorry, these lefties for Cooper, or all these lefties for Flores. I'm like, wait, I'd rather play these guys for the week. So I'm kind of taking a week at a time. But what I'm saying is I'm not afraid to kind of do that. They're my streamer for the week. They're not expensive. But the rub with that is there are always other like good players or like lots of really good corner infielders or more middle infielders available in these 12s. It's always like this kind of cornucopia of wonderful options that you can pick up. And then you have to be very like judicious, like, you know, who you're picking and, you know, if you are going for that low percentage rostered, you know, sort of like scrub guy you wouldn't typically play in a 12 versus, you know, some of the better guys.
And I think that's why you're really, really good at the 12s as well as the 15s. But your willingness to play a guy that's very low owned and very low started in the 12s because of matchups that guys aren't even looking at. That's one of something I'm guilty of is, you know, holding on to Buxton and start him instead of picking up the streamer for the week. One of my good friends, a really good 12 player, Brandon Waddell, was talking to me about your FAB article, actually. And just how much success he's had in the 12s because of the research you do on the 15s. And he kind of uses that for the 12s for streamers, and it's been really effective for him. So I think that's another reason that you're good at the 12s is the research you're doing for the 15s. So those guys you can get for a dollar or two are extremely valuable in the 12s, and they're going for $20, $30, $40 in the 15s.
I do need to manage the Sunday time better because, man, I do have 10 fab teams, but I really don't need to be spending as much time as I do. I mean, it's like going in like tweaking this bid to like, no, but I feel like I can get them for 25 and there's a feel to it. And sometimes you're overbidding, sometimes you're way over like, but one thing I notice is I'm kind of locked into my kind of my own little box. And I realize like it wouldn't hurt for me to just, actually, let me ask you this. Would it hurt my process or the article at all if I actually go and see what other sites have for certain players? Like, might that influence me? But because I feel like, for example, I kind of screwed up because I was off on Budo so much. I thought he was a $20 to $40, $50 guy. People were spending $100. I'm like, I was just so focused in on my, you know, my work and my bids and everything for that weekend. I didn't really even see it or feel it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you do the work on your article. The more information for me, the better. As long as you can kind of sift through it, you trust your own work. So yeah, looking at others' FAB articles, I think can be just that much more valuable for yourself. I would never restrict myself to just one source of information. It's my job to use that information and sift through it and make it my own. and then go from there. So yeah, I think you are limiting yourself if you're not using others' fab articles and others' information. And you know, it's still 3 weeks in a fab. We have not got our rhythm yet doing fab. I was talking to Matt Modica about it, and he's like, "I'm always rushed. I'm always rushed." And yeah, because we're not in that rhythm. We're not in week 12 yet, where we got that routine down, optimize it. I will say I'm proud of myself. This last week was one of the first weeks I actually lowered my bids on Jeff Hoffman, because I was really in on him, and I got him because I was up in the triple digits, and I dropped it down to low 80s, and I optimized it pretty good. And it seems like you never go in and lower it. It's always going higher because it's the guy you want, and it always costs you more money. So I was pretty proud of myself.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. You know what? I always feel like I start off too high, and then I start looking at other teams and maybe like some of their needs, and I try to figure out, wait, I think I can get this guy lower. And it always feels good. And usually, I don't say usually, I don't have like the stats for it, like when it works out, when it doesn't. But yeah, it's pretty interesting. Actually, I was asking you about me looking at other fab articles, like as I put my stuff together or before I do my Sunday update, to like have other sources. Cause what I realize is I get so stubborn and I don't want to have outside influences, but like maybe that is a mistake too. Like I want to keep it like authentic, but maybe I do need to kind of like get a better feel of the market, because you know, I am limiting myself if I'm just kind of thinking with my own brain on bid amounts and stuff.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%, Vlad. Put your article together, use your own knowledge for that. And then, you know, any updates or any bids you want to do, I would kind of use outsiders' help with that to kind of optimize your own thoughts. So I think that's a good idea.
Fab therapy, baby. There it is.
Get on the couch.
Really quick, want to know, if you want to make money making picks on MLB games, then you got to try Underdog Fantasy, the easiest way to play fantasy sports. In Underdog's Pick'em game, you just pick your favorite baseball players and predict whether they'll go higher or lower on stats like strikeouts, hits, and more. You pick 2 to 5 players, get all your picks right, and you can win up to 20 times your money in a single night. Be sure to sign up with the promo code FTN, and Underdog will double your first deposit of $100. So you have some bonus cash to start playing with. Again, that's underdogfantasy.com or Underdog Fantasy in the App Store. Sign up with the promo code FTN and get your first deposit doubled up to $100. You must be 18 or older, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, 21 or older in Massachusetts and Arizona, and present in the state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-GAMBLING or visit www.ncpgambling.org. In Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. In New York, call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY. In Tennessee, call 1-800-889-9789. You wanted to talk about some bullpens. Bullpens and...
Yeah. Bullpens and flux. I mean, we have Texas with Kirby Yates. Is he the guy? Is, you know, historically, Bruce Bochy's been a one-guy kind of manager. So does he stick with Yates? Does he use Robertson? Does he try to get back to Leclerc? Philadelphia with Jeff Hoffman, I literally had him in almost every league I could at the draft table, because I thought he was going to go in the Craig Kimbrel role. And then the first 3 weeks he's pitching in the sixth inning, and then all of a sudden I drop him and he's closing. What? What are you doing, Phillies? But I wanted him back because I see that him moving into that role, especially with our buddy the Onion coming back. I think he's replacing Hoffman in that earlier inning high leverage role, which is going to allow him to close. But and then you have Miami with Tanner Scott, who somehow is still the closer and gets another save tonight. You got Detroit, who fully has seemed to lock it down a little bit until AJ Hinch has a wild hair up his butt. But yeah, it's fascinating. I think all of the lack of bullpen moves last year, we've already had more changes this year through 3 weeks. So it's making fab fun. It's making team changes fun. And it's evolving. This feels like a year you could have waited on saves a little bit if you do it right.
It's so fun too. It's always like a puzzle, and there are a million puzzles going on at the same time. And just, you can spend a million years just in the, you know, the fab stuff. I'm sorry, just the bullpens, or just, you know, hitter platoon splits. And there's just so much of it. I think that's one of the things that make fantasy baseball just so amazing. But even like bullpens, right? Like you give it up to guys like Greg Jewett, who, you know, recently, you know, is already known as the big closer guy. reliever bullpen whisperer, and you know, bought Closer Monkey, that site, and you know, he's just living that closer life, but still has to do Fab and you know, other stuff. Our bullpen guy, Rob Orr, he is a stats data guy by design. I mean, literally created his own metric, won an award for it. And yeah, he knows bullpens and closers, but now that he is managing this, I mean, he's really into it. And it's funny, some of the things you see pop up, like him feeling it on a certain kind of closer, because you're watching their usage and patterns, and you understand, like, you know, manager tendencies, and you kind of can sort of predict it. Like, that's where this Yates thing kind of came to me, like where it really felt right. And it's funny because it started with like a Casey Bubba tweet on Friday night. And like, I only have one Leclerc share, Jose Leclerc, and that was a share in a main event where he just fell way past, even Mason Miller was gone. And I'm like, whatever, let's just grab a Leclerc. Not a fan, but like Bochy loves this one guy, and that's his one guy. He won the World Series with him. Let's just grab a Leclerc. So Friday night, Bubba made some comment about like, oh, in the sixth inning. Oh, he's pitching in the sixth inning. He's done. I'm like, wait, what? Wait a second. What? No, it's probably just Bochy's just like, you know, just giving him something different. Just letting him pitch the sixth. And there's nothing to worry about. He literally was quoted 3 days ago as saying he's not worried. Leclerc's still not locked in. It'll be fine. And then things just really started to progress over the weekend. Then that night, Friday night, the quote came out that Leclerc's going to kind of pull back a little bit and it's going to be someone else. But the way the usage, I think, was it that Friday game? Yeah, that Friday night game. It was David Robertson the eighth and Kirby Yates in the ninth. And there was no save op. But yeah, that was that. And there was nothing happening on the weekend. But that's just the way it lined up to me. To me, it was just like kind of, I don't know how to put it, just common sense. Like, Yates just felt like the guy. He hadn't given up a run yet. He was, you know, throws fire. You know, Robertson has been kind of solid in that eighth inning role. And it just kind of made a lot of sense. And I was like, let's go for it. Let's do it. So there's a clarity situation. The non-clarity is like your Miami pen, right? Tanner Scott's walking the park. You got Andrew Nardi is just completely regressed. And every time he has a chance to step forward with the role, he isn't taking it. And then the same thing with like Anthony Bender. Like, it's like right there for him. Like, dude, here's your job. And then, oh, gave up another run. And it's just wild. And so this whole notion of AJ Puck, who now got scratched Monday with an illness, you got ECAB, Edward Cabrera coming back, Braxton Garrett dealing with a dead arm, but he'll be fine. It's not affecting his shoulder. So these guys are back in the rotation. Ryan Weathers 10 Ks on Tuesday night. He's going to stay. AJ Puck's got to go, right? Like, at some point, if Tanner Scott can't really lock himself in, it's going to be, I think, Puck going back there. But it's just like so fun is what I'm saying. Like, just trying to figure out these puzzles is my whole roundabout way of saying it.
Well, doesn't Miami, when you strike out 10 guys, send you to AAA? So who knows if Ryan Weathers is getting sent down or not. But yeah, I would say part of fantasy baseball, there's one of the more satisfying things is getting that closer in Fab. I'd say the only thing more satisfying is getting him a week ahead for single digits and being in front of that. And there's nothing worse than being on a guy and knowing you're right on it and then him getting a save Friday, Saturday, or Sunday right before Fab and knowing that the price just went up by probably triple digits. But finding that puzzle that you're referring to and getting it right, that is such a good feeling. It's such a euphoria that you get when you nail it. So I agree with you. It's a lot of fun.
A couple of guys other more guys that are coming back soon. Josh Lowe also dealing with an oblique. The funny part is all the Lowe's and Lowe's were dealing with obliques. And Josh Lowe is, he had a grade one strain, I believe. He's coming back very soon. That's going to be a welcome addition to that Tampa team. I feel like they haven't really even gotten rolling yet. Like, I really like this roster, the offense, the pitching staff, and then even the bullpen's been kind of trash lately, but they're a lot better than this. I feel like Tampa will probably get their stuff together soon.
Yeah, I was really in on Josh Lowe early in the draft season. I thought he was big value in the fifth round, but then we had that hip issue. I got completely off, and then the oblique, and I was off even more, and then somehow I ended up with a share of him for $4 in my super auction. So I'm excited to see him coming back, and fingers crossed, because he is a fun guy to watch, and I know he made you some money last year, so you kind of hold him a little near and dear to your heart.
Yeah, and with like my only, I think Josh Lowe share is like in TGFBI, so Yeah, hey, welcome back. I hope he does well for everybody, but I hope he doesn't like super smash. But John Duran on the way back soon, and then all the hubble blue. I don't even know how to say that word anymore. With Griffin,
he nailed it.
Yeah, Griffin Jacks was like elite. I mean, he didn't give up like a run, almost even a hit in the preseason. He was really good last year. He's a top-notch reliever. But even there, the usage has been crazy. I know Rocco Baldelli is an absolute maniac, but with his lineups and everything, I mean, like, the guy can't make up his mind. We can tell a lot about people's personalities. Like, did you see the Ollie Marmol pushing an A's security guy, former cop, like out of the way? Did you see that video?
Yeah, he did not get the challenge off because of that security guard too. But I mean, if I'm not, you know, that far off base here, but you look at Marmol, you look at Rocco, you look at Skip Shoemaker, all these guys are puppets for their front office. They are just doing what they're told. They really have no major say in what's going on with the team, and they're just basically yes men. So I have a hard time really getting on it, but man, I'm not a Rocco Baldelli fan, which means I'm probably not a Minnesota front office fan either.
By the way, Dave Roberts is a known puppet for a very long time as well.
He's going to take the Dodgers far, Vlad.
Man, that's one win. They actually cut him. But yeah, that's not going to happen. He's a valued guy. Oh, by the way, the ultimate like kind of crazy, super genius move, like the galaxy brain move. They are unstretching Max Meyer for him to come back to close. I'm kidding, but I'm just saying, how funny would that be?
No, those three inning saves. Yeah, that's good job, Marlins. Just good, well-run organization.
Yeah. 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 I mean, you know, baseball, there'll be some team that like galaxy brain it, and they'll go with their closer in the start of the game. And then their middle reliever that, you know, bring in your starter for the last 5-6.
Reverse engineering.
Reverse, man. That's how it works. Buehler and Scherzer, both expected back soon, early May now for Scherzer, like way ahead of schedule. And then technically we can say, hey, that's looking good for the people that have invested in him, right? I mean, that's the prevailing thought. But then, like, again, what if Scherzer comes back and he's just not the same, right? We saw stretches last season when he was horrible. He's also, you know, pretty old. Like, we don't know what to expect from Scherzer, Verlander. These guys are coming back. I don't know, man. I kind of have my money on between, like, Buehler, Scherzer, and Verlander. I actually think they'll all be fine as long as they're healthy. I don't think they're going to be, like, horrible. But for some reason, I feel like Walker Buehler is going to come back jamming. I could be just wrong, and it's not my Dodger bias. I just a feeling. I feel like he's gonna be pretty good.
Or the fact he's 12, 15 years younger than these guys. That's true. Might help.
Could be their son.
I was not in on Scherzer or Verlander coming in just because of the age and the skills decline before the injuries. It could bite me in the butt, but I'd rather be out a year early than a year late. Now, I agree with you 100% on Walker Buehler. Towards the end of draft season, I was started to take him as kind of a back end round 13 or auction target as a number four, number five starter that I think can be a number two once he comes back. And if he's back for 5 months, 4.5 months, and actually pitches, which the Dodgers actually seem like they're going to need him to, it could be great value. So I'm excited for him to come back. I don't think he's an ace as he was getting drafted, you know, the last couple of years for, mm-hmm. but I think he's still a really good pitcher.
Yep. And then you got, going back to closers here for a second, Jordan Romano and Eric Swanson both coming back. Jordan Romano, I'm sure people have missed him. They'll be happy to get him back. And you got Nate Pearson being optioned to AAA. That guy was a big-time prospect that's just never really panned out, unfortunately. Tried as a starter, as a reliever. So the Chad Green, Yimi Garcia kind of value days are over as long as Romano is okay. But like getting both those guys back, I mean, that's kind of your eighth, ninth inning men. It's a good, pretty good bullpen overall.
Yeah, Jordan Romano is going to look like a screaming value if he's healthy because he fell a long ways in the main events. Circling back real quick to Griffin Jacks, is it not crazy that he got one save opportunity?
Yeah.
And that was opening day and just mm-hmm. nailed it down and was absolutely a stud. But that's just that Minnesota Twins, Rocco Baldelli. So it's pretty crazy. And then the Nate Pearson, the Arizona Fall League great Nate Pearson, everybody was in love with him throwing 101 It's hard to believe he hasn't turned in anything, and he's pretty much stayed healthy. Just the skills have not evolved.
By the way, as I'm just kind of as you're talking, I'm perusing box scores. I realized that the what are they the A's, they called up Kyle McCann, and again, nobody really cares about your 15 team catchers or whatever, but no relation to Brian McCann. He was called back up. He played a couple games, an opening weekend. But yeah, he's with the A's. He hit a, I think, 2-run bomb. So just a name there to keep an eye on. But yeah, the A's, man, Estuary Ruiz and that whole thing. So even after that, came in pinch hit bomb, the hottest week ever in the minors, playing pissed off. And what do they do? They didn't even play him. He didn't even start on Tuesday night's game. There's so many jokers in this league. Like, what in the hell is going on with these managers, these organizations? It's sad. It's just kind of how the world's going anyways. All right, I'm going down the deep end now. Save me. Save me.
No, I am so pissed off about the way Estuary Ruiz is being handled, mainly because I have him in multiple places. And I was a believer that, he was a 300 hitter in the minor leagues. And I think if he got the opportunity, his strikeout rate was below 20%. And he just needed to play. And then you have Mark Kotze with a clown face on, saying he needs to strike out less, and sends him down to AAA and won't play him. When he's got Seth Brown striking out, he's got Lawrence Butler striking out, he's got the most strikeouts as a team in the major leagues, but he's basically isolating. They're probably one of the most talented players on their team, other than Zach Gelof, Gelof the Great. But I just don't know what this team's doing. I really hope they give him a chance to play, because I think the guy's actually a legit decent baseball player. I don't think he's a star, but I think he's a 260 hitter, and if you actually let him play, I think he could score. He could steal. I mean, we know he could steal. I mean, but I don't get it, Vlad, and I'm really frustrated about it. And I know I sound frustrated, but this team is just—it's one of many teams, like you said. That what are they doing? This is a major league team that's being run like a clown show right now.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's the ultimate clown show of them all. So yeah, when you see like well-run organizations, you gotta respect it. I don't know, how do you feel about the Cubs here in this rotation? So we touched on it a little bit, but we talked about Ben Brown. I'm very clearly over the years, I've been very stout about or very vocal about not being a Jameson Taillon guy. Like whenever someone asks me, pitcher X or Jameson Taillon rest of season, whatever, I'm always going to say, the other side of that. Like same thing, if you ask me somebody versus Patrick Sandoval or someone versus Tyler Anderson, just like give me the other side. I want no parts of these guys. And I mean, nothing, he'll be, I don't know, maybe he's okay and he could stick in the rotation. He's just your middle of the road. He's not the guy he was in 2018 in that massive, amazing year and, pre all the, the health issues and everything. But I don't know. Like he's not the answer. Kyle Hendricks stinks. I mean, he doesn't have an 11 half year ERA here by accident. You got to let these guys like Ben Brown pitch. You already got Shohei Imanaga. You've got, obviously Justin Steele, who is a top Cy Young candidate. He will be back at a certain point. So even Jordan Wicks is looking pretty good. So what do you think about these, the Cubs rotation and the way it settles in over the next few months?
It's really tough to kind of see what's going to happen next. When in doubt, I like to follow the money, and Taillon is signed to a big contract. I do not see them not pitching him when healthy. I
Yeah.
actually was interested in him a little bit as a number seven or eight entering the year, not as any type of upside savior, but as a guy you can trust in matchups to get you innings and some wins, and some non-killing ratios. So Ben Brown has looked great. They kind of sacrificed him to the Wolves that first relief appearance, but been really good since. Kyle Hendricks is about as burnt toast could be. Javier Assad, he's smoke and mirrors. So I don't know what comes next, Vlad. You got Steele coming back. I know one thing I'm comfortable saying is I really believe Taillon's going to pitch. So however that works out, usually injuries and innings limits and things like that take care of themselves when somebody's coming back. But I don't know what the next step is.
And I'm just bouncing around here, but just because I'm just looking stuff up, man. Is this right? Am I looking at the right stuff here? I was looking at stolen base leaders because I wanted to see, the Angels with Ron Washington, they were going to run more. I looked at the box score in the 13-inning game. They stole five bases. Zach Nato stole two of those. You got Renhifo with one. Mike Trout stole a base. Even Anthony Rendon stole a base. I thought they'd be among the league leaders, but they've got like 18 stolen bases, which is like fifth or sixth in the league. There's a huge discrepancy. The Cincinnati Reds, through I think what Monday's games, they have 32 stolen bases, two stolen bases per game. The Nationals have almost 30, and then it's just all way down. Everyone else is pretty much in the teens or single digits. But the Cubs are dead last. They only have two stolen bases this season. So I'm just throwing out random team season stats 2 weeks in.
How's that Nico Horner cheap 45 steals looking so far? There's no victory laps. I actually have some Horner, so I don't know what the new manager's doing there. Craig Counsell is the one that went there, right? I'm not mistaken. And
yeah,
talk about a different philosophy than they had, and it doesn't seem to be working so far. But it's still very early. A lot of times you'll see when it's cold out in these cities, they're not run as much, and then warms up, they start running like crazy. But it's pretty crazy. I mean, Stuart Fairchild on the Reds has what, six steals? Mm-hmm. Some teams are just running like crazy, and then some teams just refuse to run. And it feels like they're missing opportunities to, you know, kind of put some rallies together and put some runs on easy runs on the board by not running, with the success rate being as high as it is.
And I believe Ellie De La Cruz stole his seventh base tonight. So he's getting up there, almost catching up with the man, Bryce Tarang there. I think Bryce Tarang and Ronald Acuna Jr. are tied for the league. By the way, Lane Thomas, seven stolen bases so far. And that actually reminds me, I just want to give a shout out to Phil Dussault, who he'll come on at some point with us and join us on the show. But he really is, man. He's really, I don't need to stoke his ego anymore. Let's keep it down here. But two guys that I know that he was on, at least I kind of figured it out towards the end of draft season. One was Lane Thomas, and I know he's got him on all his teams. And I mean, whatever, Lane Thomas is hitting 200, but it doesn't matter. He's got seven stolen bases. You know, the power will come eventually. And then his other guy, and I do not have enough shares of him. And even when I kind of figured out that he was one of Phil's guys, I still stubbornly didn't, you know, really go after any shares, because I don't want to be the guy that's, you know, going after other, you know, people's picks. But like Ranger Suarez, amazing dude. Nine I wasn't shut out, was it? But it was a complete game. I don't know what the heck Phil saw in him. We'll have to have him on at some point and tell us. Maybe he'll share some of the secret formula. But he was big on Ranger Suarez, and Ranger Suarez is looking amazing so far.
Yeah, that is just an amazing find. Kudos to Phil. I went back and looked. I could not find what he saw, but he told me he had him as a top 30 starting pitcher. And so far, so good. Good job, Phil. But keep that head small, buddy. You want to keep it in your hat. You don't want to get too big where you can't fit a ball cap on. But keep killing it, and hopefully I can take you down in one of the big leagues.
Yeah, and I think I even asked him, like, hey, man, what was it? I told him I was going to talk about it on the show. He's like, you know what? It's just like, you know, it's his numbers, right? It's, you know, these math guys, they do what math guys do. And he had like 15 little things in his numbers, and just, that's what it said. It says Ranger Suarez. And you remember Ranger Suarez in his big breakout, remember? Like, he was a thing. There was that second half of the season with the Phillies, where he had like, and I had him on some teams. It was magic. It was like eight straight. It was that, it was like the Tarik Skubal, Cole Reagans run of last year. It was like the last 2 months of the season, he got the best matchups of all time. And he just was, it was like eight Ks with one earned run, or seven Ks, no earned runs, like six innings, like every single start. And then he was super hyped going into the next year, and that didn't pan out. And then since then, he's just one of those guys that, like, a super post hype sleeper. Like, he was just with all the amazing, like, Jared Jones's, Whitlock's, all these guys we were targeting in the late rounds, you know, a guy like Ranger Suarez just kind of sneaks through. And then you realize, hey, man, he's on Philly. He's got good stuff. Like, you know, we're missing out here. Sometimes it is just that simple, right? Like, the same conclusions Phil's, you know, formula comes to can be like also sort of figured out with, like, you know, instinct and gut as well. Not to demean it. That's not my point in that. I'm just saying there's like different paths to finding the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, we've all hit on our own guys with feelings, research, data, whatever it is. I think that year you're talking about with Ranger, if I'm not mistaken, he was actually closing for 2 or 3 weeks for the Phillies. Mm-hmm. It ended up getting taken out of that role and stretched out for the rotation. I dropped him thinking he wasn't going to pitch enough innings, and it just bit me in the ass. Man, talk about regret city, because like you said, he was just nails the last 2 months of the season. So it's a pretty good segue into our biggest regrets so far, right, Vlad?
Yeah, but, well, you know what? The one thing is it triggered in my mind is that's the Michael King formula, right? Because Michael King was unhittable, dominant, and then goes up like high in ADP. And I mean, obviously the jury's still out. Two of his first four games are against the Dodgers. And then he had like a seven walk game. So his numbers are kind of skewed. I figure he'll be fine. He'll settle in at some point. But like that's the similar case study, like the reliever turned, to a starter, and how does it work out? Let's see how Jordan Hicks works out the rest of the year.
Yeah, I mean, and that's always the ultimate question is how many innings can they max at doing that? So it'd be interesting if they like Jordan Hicks can get to 140, 150 innings because he looks really good so far.
Biggest regrets, you just mentioned it. And I was looking, I know Rasball, they've got their amazing player rater tool. Fangraphs recently came out with a pretty cool one as well. It's all similar stuff, but it's nice the way it's formatted where you're just seeing the current value, right? Like you log into these sites and you see Mookie Betts is the best hitter so far in baseball, earning $40+ at this point. Wilson Contr I mean, William, I'm sorry, Contreras is like number two. It's fun stuff. And Reed Detmers is currently the top rated pitcher. This is just standard 5x5, 15 teamers. So it's kind of let's end the show here with a little bit of like looking at those top guys, thinking of how things will transpire for them the rest of the year, just in general, like some of your biggest regrets and players from this top range you think can keep it up and be like true value, true studs for the season.
You want to kind of just go back and forth like a snake draft, or how do you want to
Oh,
do it?
sure. I actually
So
hadn't really thought of mine too many, so I'd let you start.
I'll start, and I'll start with Jared Jones. My God, he looks good. Talk about a nice Strider replacement if you're able to get both of them on the team so far. And I'm just kicking myself because he was a guy I targeted. But when they signed, I think it was Domingo Herman. I dropped him basically down far enough off my draft lists where I wasn't going to get him because another stupid team doing stupid things. But Jared Jones didn't give up a run in preseason, and I missed the boat. And he looks like the real deal. So I am definitely having some serious buyer's remorse or non-buyer's remorse on him.
You know how I placate myself as I say, you can't have everyone, and that there's many ways that we can win a league. So that's how I kind of make myself feel better about not really having much Jared Jones because, hey, I got Ronaldo Lopez. And even though I sat him against Houston this week, because most people would, but I still have him. And hopefully he doesn't blow up on me against a bad team next week, but that's baseball. But yeah, definitely. I wish I did have Jared Jones. He looks amazing. Definitely looks like, we don't want to get to quite to Cy Young candidate, but. NL Rookie of the Year, I think, is in the mix here. I think one of my biggest regrets so far is I have a few shares, but not enough because he wasn't a huge target for me, and that's Taylor Ward. And as I think most people know, that's my this year's Yelich from last season. And yeah, I mean, he was one of those guys like where he was going, it was like, okay, he's at ADP. I need an outfielder, I'll take him. And usually it was if I need speed, I'll go with like a Stephen Kwan. If Tyler O'Neill's there, I would take Tyler O'Neill. But he wasn't like a huge target for me, so I don't have him on any of my main teams. And I'm starting to notice a pattern here with my Yelich candidates. They always like really blow up the year after. So that's something I need to keep in mind, especially for next year for Jez Chisholm. But yeah, Taylor Ward, man, he's absolutely crushing it, and he's healthy, man. So it's really nice to see. Angels offense, they were actually among the home run leaders last season. And I'm looking at their roster. It's really not that bad. They got a real life manager there. Man, if you can somehow even have Rendon healthy for all season, like we forget this dude was like, MVP candidate, World Series team just what, 4 years ago. And even if he's like a little bit motivated or just tired of all the everyone giving me, crap stuff, and just like maybe the Angels don't trade Trout, maybe they just compete. Who knows?
Yeah, the only caveat with saying their roster is not that bad, it's also saying it's not that good. So
That's a good point.
it's interesting though, but we found a new title for your article next year. It's next year's Yelich. And so
there it is.
You're just nailing
there it.
There
it is. Yes.
I actually have a decent amount of Taylor Ward, and I am really enjoying it. Hope he can stay healthy and continue the production, because I think we talked, I don't know if it was offline or online, about you actually being correct on Ward last year. It's just the injuries derailed and the skills were actually there. He just didn't get an opportunity to do it. So definitely I like the discount this year, and he's performing. I mean, I'm going to take some low-hanging fruit with my next guy, Ellie De La Cruz. I actually targeted him in a league I was punting batting average, and I still didn't get him because he went for $32. And good job, Matt Shepard. But talk about a guy that you just want to watch. You want to stop what you're doing, turn the TV on, and watch whatever he's doing, hitting, fielding, running. He's a guy I want to own, and I don't have any. I'm a little sad. The BABIP's going to regress. The strikeout rate's going to hurt him. But if he can hit 250, man, he is going to be putting up some stats across the board.
Yeah, yes, indeed, he is. He looks amazing. I think I got him in one OC, and that's really it. I just don't have much Ellie. But yeah, I mean, it's really funny. And you think back to the preseason when we're all bored and like, but what if he gets sent down to the minors? Anything's possible, right? Anything's possible. I got one more guy for you here. That's Reed Detmers. And man, yeah, I feel like me, you, so many of us, like a year early, he had that no hitter. But other than that, I mean, he's just been kind of like below average. And I think there's like a little correlation with like him and Hunter Brown, where they, you know, they seem like guys that can produce like a 3 ERA and strike out 200 guys, but they both had ERAs over 5. And just in a full season, you'd think that they'd be fine. But I mean, Reed Detmers looks incredible right now. He punched out 12 Red Sox. And then the next game, he didn't get all those strikeouts, but the same team that you would think kind of knows him a little better after a start, and he crushed them again. So he just looks incredible. He's really dialed in. You know, there'll be hiccups along the way, but I think he can be a top 20 guy.
Is there anything more frustrating or depressing in fantasy than being a year too early and then being out? It hurts. It feels like you were right, and then you get no rewards from it. It definitely hurts, but it's a great call. He has looked really good, so I hope he continues and stays healthy. By the way, on this player rater, I got a nice little chuckle that Shane Bieber still the number 10 pitcher on the player rater. So I thought that was funny. The last guy for me is Bryce Miller. I even went into my last main targeting him, and he went too early. But it looks like the breakout's in full effect. That splitter, the new pitch he has, he's throwing it a bunch. He looks really good, and I don't have any of him. So I really think he's going to be good the rest of the season for Seattle, and their pitchers are going to continue to get better throughout the year because they've started off a little slow.
Yeah, all those guys, Kirby, Castillo, they will all be fine. By the way, reference from earlier in the show when Jason was talking about the Onion, that, of course, is Orion Kirkering, new Philadelphia guy that, hey, if he gets one save on Sunday, guess who's going to be bidding 150 plus? Everybody. Everybody wants
Don't put that saves. In the world, Web. Jeff Hoffman.
Yeah, Jeff Hoffman. We like Jeff Hoffman. All right. I like Jose Alvarado, but hey. Yeah, all right. And we'll save a rants for next week. I had something that was on my mind, but I think I've tweeted it out. It's coming out there, but just as far as small samples, let's be careful with the small samples. Baseball, it's long. It's a long season. Whatever the player's done in the last couple of days, they might do the exact opposite the next week. You want to look at Hunter Brown as the perfect example. People literally calling for my head for even the thought of considering starting him versus Atlanta. Not taking a victory lap here because I did not start him on all teams. I did start him on a few. It was dangerous. It's probably the bad play. It's probably like the wrong process. But the point is, that's baseball, right? It was like George Kirby got tanked in the next start. He was just fine. Max Fried destroyed next start. Hey, it's Max Fried again. That's baseball, right? Like Colton Cowser, Michael Bush, these guys aren't going to be hitting, 1,000 for the season. So it's a long season. Let's all stay humble. Let's get it.
I mean, Colton Cowser's not going to hit 60 home runs, Vlad.
I mean, I don't know. That's a thing about baseball, right? It's crazy. Anything can happen. Like he could hit 35. He could be their best player. I don't know. Anything can happen.
Yeah. Fun episode, Vlad. I really enjoyed that.
Please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast for my co-host of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, Jason Anthony. I'm Vlad Sedler. We appreciate you. We'll talk to you next week.